Attribution, who actually launched the cyber attack that hit your organization, has emerged as one of the toughest challenges in cybersecurity. Often it comes down to guesswork, and according to my next guest, few people have much faith in the accuracy of those attributions. So what to do? For some recommendations, John Davis II, Senior Information Scientist at the RAND Corporation. Dr. Davis, good to have you on.
Yes, thank you very much.
You have done a study through RAND on attribution. First of all, what is the importance of attribution? I mean, if attack comes in, you fix it. Does it really matter at that point?
That's a great question. Attribution really is an important component if you're concerned about accountability. At the end of the day, when you think about attribution and make an analogy to a court system, before penalties can be exacted, it's important to know with certainty who indeed is the party that's responsible for the given attack. So in many cases, this is a key component, and this is particularly important when we're working with attacks that are at a nation state level, where we think that the person or party responsible may be associated with a given government. And this has geopolitical implications. So attribution is particularly important in those instances.
And why is it so hard to fix attribution? Is it because they use the Tor browser or something and it's seven hops from who it actually was?
When you think about a cyber attack versus a conventional attack using conventional weapons, the evidence that exists in conventional warfare is much more obvious and clear to the observers. In the case of cyberspace, it's less clear. There are ways to fake data, fake trails to essentially make false flags appear so that it looks like it might be due to one party when in fact it's due to another party. Oftentimes, the date when the evidence is discovered, and for that matter, the date when the attack occurs, is many, many months after the infiltration first occurred. So the attack may lay dormant for many months before it is finally exercised and utilized against the victim.
That's the so-called dwell time.
Right. And so there are many instances where these attacks or infections, so to speak, will lay dormant for many, many months. And by the time they're discovered, the evidence of who may have been the perpetrator, those tracks are hard to uncover. Dynamic IP addresses have changed. The computer infrastructure that was used to lay the framework for the attack is no longer present. And so it's very difficult to know with certainty who the perpetrator was.
So you and your co-authors at RAND have undertaken a pretty detailed study of attribution. What was the goal of this whole look?
Well, the goal of this work was to think about whether there would be value in having an organization that operated at an international level that would be tasked with performing attribution investigations, and to think about how this organization might operate. This work was sponsored by Microsoft, and they're very concerned about attribution and more broadly about dealing with cyber attacks in general, because they, as well as many other technology companies, provide the products and services on which this cyber war occurs. So they were interested in having us think through how this organization might operate. And so essentially what we did in the report is first we reviewed various cyber attacks over the years and considered the various actors that were involved in the process of attribution. So we specifically were thinking about it from an attribution perspective. So we reviewed these notable cyber attacks, and then we described the various characteristics associated with the attribution process. And then we proposed some characteristics of an international organization that would be tasked with engaging in cyber attribution investigations.
We're speaking with John Davis II, Senior Information Scientist at the RAND Corporation. Sounds like you're almost proposing an Interpol, as it were, for cyber attribution.
Yes. The way we thought of this is we, in fact, considered several organizations that operate at an international level that are tasked with various kinds of investigatory activities. Interpol is one such kind of an organization. We also thought about the IAEA and thinking about nuclear proliferation and several other organizations that could possibly serve as models for the this organization. In addition, we thought about other kinds of bodies that engage in dealing with addressing perpetrators and whether or not there is sufficient evidence to deal with the given perpetrator. So, for example, we made a lot of analogies, for example, to the U.S. Supreme Court in terms of how they operate with a set of cases that are used to that are selected and used for coming up with very important decisions.
And so which model did you find would be potentially most effective?
There are quite a few organizations that we looked at. So, for example, the Talon Manual was produced earlier this year, the Talon Manual 2.0. This was a follow-up to the first Talon Manual. And what the Talon Manual did was it reviewed international law and it determined how international law could apply to cybersecurity. And, you know, whether or not it was applicable to cybersecurity. But one of the approaches that they used was that they had an international group of experts, 30 international group of experts, who essentially came from legal backgrounds and were able to do this assessment and analysis to determine how international law applies to cyberspace. And we thought that that international group of experts was an interesting approach that we might use in the body that we were proposing. So that was one of the informative organizations. Another organization, as I just mentioned, was the U.S. Supreme Court. We thought it was interesting how the U.S. Supreme Court had to go through a process of first selecting cases, and then we thought it was interesting how the various Supreme Court justices could each weigh in on a given case, and there could be multiple opinions rendered about the case. We recognize that there may be scenarios where not everyone comes to the same conclusion. So we thought it was important that there be a process where there could be a majority opinion, as well as some dissenting minority opinions, and then also the possibility in certain cases where a given participant may need to abstain. One important point that I haven't touched on that I think is key here is that we felt it was very important for this organization to have a transparent process and be perceived as having minimal bias. We felt that if you look at the cyber attribution process, there is the risk of politicization. And so we wanted to do our best to avoid that. So that was a key aspect of the organization that we recommended, that there be a level of transparency and avoidance of political bias.
This organization would not be, say, based in North Korea, probably safe to say. What do you envision for the United States and the federal government in such a proposed organization?
Well, the way we actually believe that this organization should not have state memberships. So at a certain level, it would operate almost like an NGO that would not have direct membership by states. Part of the reason why we propose that is if you step back and look at who are the current players in the cyber attribution world, you clearly have sophisticated governments that have intelligence agencies that are able to weigh in. And we've seen recently how the FBI and the DNI are able to weigh in on cyber attribution with respect to cases like the DNC hack and the North Korea hack of Sony. In addition, there are quite a few private sector firms, CrowdStrike, FireEye, many others that provide services for a fee to engage in cyber attribution services. And we think that both of these classes of organizations provide very valuable services. One of the challenges when government intelligence bodies are engaged in cyber attribution is that the process tends to have a degree of opacity in that much of the data is often classified and therefore can't be revealed in the various reports that are published. A challenge that also occurs is that there is no standardized way of both engaging in the investigation as well as communicating the results of the investigation. And this communication process, we thought, was very, very important. At the end of the day, we're dealing with a fairly complex topic, inherently complex, because of the technical aspects associated with it. So we felt that it was important to strive to have a level of standardization that would make it easier to consume by the various parties that need to understand and utilize the results of a cybersecurity attribution investigation.
John Davis II is Senior Information Scientist at the Pardee Rand Graduate School and Co-Director of the Center for Scalable Computing and Analysis. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Find a link to his attribution study and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.